When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Athletic.
This is the best club in the world. Don't care what other people think.
Liverpool are closing in on victory, but there's a lot of work between them and winning it. And they're not winning this one yet because Leandro Trossard has turned the ball home and has a hat-trick. Brighton are level.
We were not sitting deep, we were not attacking high, we were somewhere in between. And that's how they got their moments still. I don't know how many situations I saw today where the offensive players could just turn between the lines. Horrendous, really horrible to watch.
Well, Jürgen admits Liverpool were just horrible to watch against Brighton. He's not wrong, is he? A clean sheet is almost impossible to buy at the moment. There's nothing convincing about this once well-oiled machine. So with confidence hit, how does the manager get a reaction against Rangers in the Champions League? If you're not already subscribing to The Athletic, you can read all of the articles on Liverpool, everything on the site, if you head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. And there's a special price of £1 a month for 6 months. So head to theathletic.com/Liverpool pod. I'm Steve Hothersall with The Red Agenda, joined by Andy Jones and the Mirror writer David Anderson. And the international break, Andy, was meant to initiate the reset that we'd all been waiting for, but absolutely nothing seems to have changed.
No, exactly. The podcast we did, I think during it, that I was on, we sort of spoke about this being, well, that sort of long break, longer than expected because of circumstances, sort of being a really good chance to sort of press that reset button, take a step back, sort of assess what's gone wrong and then look to sort of fix it. And then you watch that first 20 minutes and it was probably worse than anything we'd seen, you know, before that. And that includes the Napoli game, which I didn't think it could have got much worse than that. But that 20 minutes definitely gave it a run for his money because Liverpool just looked so underprepared for Brighton. And I know Klopp spoke afterwards and sort of said it was a surprise how they set up and they did have a new manager, and I understand that, but equally, surely you can't look that underprepared for any team, really, because Brighton were just able to basically do what they wanted on the pitch and sort of just took Liverpool apart. And Liverpool should probably have been 4-0 down in that first 20 minutes, given the chances that Brighton created. They obviously scored the two goals, and Danny Welbeck has a really good, you know, free header from 8 yards out or so, and Trossard forces Alisson into a great save. And it was crazy watching it, considering, you know, how much emphasis has been put on this month, and, you know, it's seen as this, you know, defining month, and Liverpool needed to get off to a strong start on the front foot. And, well, it looked like the players were still on that international break and hadn't clicked into gear, and Brighton took full advantage of that.
You're desperate to be positive, aren't you? You don't want to sort of put the negatives out there, but you've got to be realistic at the same time, David. And I'm just wondering, do you feel is this an element of the worst setbacks that the players have had to face under the manager in his time at Liverpool?
It probably is, because we always go back to that period in the 2021 season where it all fell apart. Was it start with that West Brom home game just between Christmas and New Year? And of course, then they had that awful run at Anfield. It was just lose, lose, lose. And it took till what the Fulham defeat was at early March. And then they finally clicked in and they salvaged that season and they actually got third. And, you know, it wasn't too bad. But you sort of look at this now and you're right. See, what really worries me about that, if you think that period lasted, what, 2.5-ish months, we're now basically the same period with into this season. If you go back to August the 6th, the start of the season, and, you know, that was October the 1st for that Brighton game, and you're not really seeing much of an upturn. Like, the only positive result, of course, was the Bournemouth. But, of course, we now know that Bournemouth's so bad that day, I think, you know, anyone would have thumped them 9-0. And you're right, you're just scratching around saying, well, what is the positive? Where's the upturn? And, you know, when you listen to what Jürgen said on Saturday after the match, you know, sort of words like, oh, yeah, Brighton deserved a draw. And, like, you know, confidence is like a little flower and it can be easy like squash. And you're thinking, wow, these are the mentality monsters. These are the, this is the team that nothing's supposed to face, and this is the team that can overcome anything. And at the minute, they just can't. And it's all the basics, as you say. You know, you can't keep a clean sheet. You're conceding, what, nine times in your last 11 games. You're conceding the first goal. All these bad things, always leaving yourself a mountain to climb. And then even on Saturday, when they do the comeback, they get it to 3-2. But I don't think anyone at Anfield really thought, right, that's it, game over. Liverpool are going to win this now. There's sort of that sense of dread. And then there are so many bad things from the past creeping back. And then when it goes to 3-3, a lot of Liverpool fans, well, that's it. The faith's gone. They don't believe that Liverpool can do one of the trademark comebacks. They start leaving. And all of a sudden you start thinking, wow, we're almost back where Liverpool were in, you know, in Jurgen's early days, sort of 2016-17, where they were sort of like, you know, struggling to win games. Like, you know, I think Dom King in his meal piece, they cited, you know, the Palace game when they were losing 2 and they turned around, everyone's leaving with, you know, minutes to go. And you sense that from among the fans, but there's just that lack of belief now. They don't sort of think, yeah, they're going to pull this one out of the fire, and it's not there. And as you say, if the fans aren't confident and the players aren't confident, it's just a horrible combination.
It's hard to know how we've got to this point, isn't it? Andy, you've written a great piece looking at the weekend, analysing what's gone wrong. You identified two things in there, but I think a really significant part of that is you talk about the fact that emotion has always played a massive part in Jurgen Klopp teams.
Yeah, it has, and having that confidence, and when Liverpool have been at their best, they've tactically been very good, which is the other side of it. I mean, they weren't against Brighton until they sort of eventually figured it out, but they were 2-0 down at that point. But it's that confidence, that belief that has always sort of got them through. You look back to sort of those, I mean, they've sort of referenced it there, that you look back at the, especially the league winning campaign when they won so many games by sort of one goal margins, but they were able to, you know, manage those games and look comfortable, even though the scoreline wasn't particularly, you know, comfortable. But on this occasion and at the moment, they look a shell of that. They look so under. It looks like the pressure's getting to them. It looks like they're carrying a weight on the shoulders. Because they know they're better than this. This is the thing. And the problem is that every setback, and there seems to be a setback once every game at least, you know, the worst possible start on Saturday, for example. And you did feel, as Dave said, you felt that there wasn't that confidence that when they got 3-2 up, it was almost like, oh no, what's gonna go wrong next, type thing. And it feels like we're at that point where even the players might be constantly thinking about what's gonna go wrong rather than, right, how do we solve these problems? And that's what it, you know, that type of emotion, that it's a massive part, because if you don't have the belief, you know, you can have all, you know, you have the best tactics in the world, but if you don't believe in yourselves and you aren't confident enough to see out games, or you know, go on the front foot and take the lead in the first place, which Liverpool seems to have lost the ability to do as well, it's just a recipe for disaster, really. And it's very difficult, because if you're getting it wrong tactically, which they did against Brighton to start off the game, and then you're on the back foot, it's difficult to build that confidence in any way. And the Ajax game was, I think, one of the frustrating things is the fact that the Ajax game was seen as a really, well, it was sort of seen as a big moment, or a potential big moment in the season. The late goal, the performance was generally pretty good. Liverpool looked like Liverpool again, if you like. But then they had a huge break, and any momentum that they could have taken from that, you know, dissipated, because you had everyone jetting off across the world, and, you know, what, a 3-week break, basically, and you come back and it's basically new. It's not, they weren't able to build off that, and that hasn't helped either.
We've had a few of those potential big moments that have never sort of led on to the resurgence that we're hoping for, David. Now, when we were planning this pod and we were talking sort of collectively about what we thought was wrong, it was interesting, obviously, that the emotion element was one, but you brought up a different word. You said discipline. And you think there's a discipline issue there at the moment?
Well, yeah, when I sort of mean discipline, I just mean in people maybe doing their jobs and sticking to the script, because I can't believe what Jurgen Klopp tells the players to. I tell you what, let's start against Brighton and give them loads of space and let them run all over the place and don't track their runs and don't track the markers. And, you know, Andy alluded to that too. You watch that first 20 minutes and you're sort of rubbing your eyes a little bit. Is that really Liverpool out there defending? Because, you know, yes, Brighton started really well and they played some really nice football. They were doing the triangles. It was great passing moves and stuff. But Liverpool were so naive in what they were doing. Like, you know, you sort of look at that sort of first goal and you're struggling to believe that. Is that the Liverpool's back line? You know, you see sort of Trent's header up in there and then Jordan sort of half going for the ball on the edge there, and then sort of easy losing out for Fabinho sort of looking on, and the ball, then Trent again misses it and they score. And I think it's stuff like that there. And you just, you know, we just go back to that defensive solidity that Liverpool used to have. And it feeds into that aura they used to have too, where teams, well, we're not going to score against this lot because they're the clean sheet kings. You know, Liverpool is honestly, we could win a game 1-0. Whereas now teams look at them and think, we can get it this lot. You know, your aura's gone. Teams come down for you and think, we can get a result here today. They've seen everybody come. And it's not a coincidence. Like, if you think of now Palace and, you know, Newcastle really made it hard. You know, Brighton there on Saturday. Ajax made it trouble for them. You know, they're not all suddenly become brilliant teams. It's just a sign of where Liverpool have slipped. And teams now come to Anfield and think, you know, we can get something here today. We will score. We know we can score because we know that defence is vulnerable. We know they've got problems. And I say that's what maybe it's a discipline, that sort of like shape and solidity they used to have, or like none shall pass. And it's a collective thing too. I know like Trent's been getting a lot of, you know, stick because of the England thing, and people say, oh, look at him, you know, he didn't play well again on Saturday. But, you know, it was right along the back four. And like Alisson was superb. And if I hadn't been for him, Liverpool would have lost maybe, you know, six, something like that there. You know, but certainly when you go along the back four, you look in the midfield and you're sort of scratching, is anybody doing? Like Bobby Firmino did very well on Saturday, but it's a real collective thing. And I'm really bemused by it because normally you can attribute things, you can put your finger on it, you can say it's a hangover from last season. We said, well, why should it be? Because they had previous setbacks and they've gone on to win Champions Leagues and Premier Leagues the following season. So what is it that's wrong? Why are these players who are, you know, world class, who were fated, and, you know, you could talk about Salah there. You know, what's happened to them collectively that it's almost like, you know, the Superman playing a kryptonite around their necks at the minute. It's just really hard to get your head around because, they say, we're now, what, just over two months of the season, and it's still that sort of, like a Ferrari, then you've gone like out, you put diesel in it, and it's just boom, 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 you know, going along like that. Then you think, what is wrong? Why is this thing not performing? We know this is a high-performance vehicle, but what have you done?
Oh, I love this analogy. High-performance vehicle has gone a bit wrong. It's almost like Jürgen's message isn't getting through. And he alluded to that in the comments that he made after the game. I think his quote was, he said, I spoke to the boys in a similar way in which I spoke to you. So, in other words, talking about how he spoke to the press. I don't know how many times I have to say we need a reaction. So, Andy, it's almost like he's saying to them, I'm telling you again and again and again, and you're simply not picking up on this or reacting to it.
Yeah, and I mean, even you sort of look at the first two goals, and even at Liverpool, where, you know, we're caught out by Brighton tactically, the two goals weren't as a result of sort of those types of things. You look at them, it's a poor clearance from the first one, poor clearance from Trent. They don't react to the sort of the ball at the edge of the area, and the second one is, you know, Trent sort of tries to chest down a sort of long clearance and gets caught out, and then Brighton work it from there. And there's sort of things that Klopp can't really control. You know, there's elements of, you know, the tactics and stuff like that which he, you know, he's in charge of. But, you know, the manager can't necessarily plan for players just making, you know, silly mistakes that they've not made previously. And I imagine it is really frustrating for him in some aspects of it, because Liverpool, the goals Liverpool concede are generally coming from sort of just mistakes and little things the players are doing, and that they are difficult to control for the manager. But that's not, obviously it's not to absolve him from any blame at all in this. But yeah, no, it's concerning that if your manager is continuing to ask for reactions and he's not getting it from the players, then it raises so many questions really as to why that's not the case. And because,
well, he'll be questioning himself over that as well, Jürgen.
Yeah, exactly, and it's, you know, how, you know, the type of message that he's trying to get across. How is he trying to get it across? And is it, you know, is it a case that, so he's been with some of these players for a long time now, and it is, you know, sometimes you get to that point where the same type of message can suddenly not have the same effect, and it's then, you know, I'm sure he'll be looking at himself as the first thing of, what can I do to make this different? What can I do to change, to try and get this reaction? Because the reaction, usually we do see Liverpool react when they have a bad result. Usually we do see them come back and, you know, and string results together and go on these runs, but they look so far from that, and that's clear, you know, it's evidently a problem. That's the thing, they've had, you know, this long break where you would expect them to have tried different ways, different methods to try and, you know, get the players back to the level they're at, and nothing seems to be working. And when nothing's working, it's not a good sign, is it?
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped. Streaming June 4th. Only on Hulu.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
David, you, as you rightly said, it's not all Trent's fault, but he's getting an awful lot of headlines. He had another pretty bad game. First half was really poor by his own standards, and the worst possible time to put in that sort of display after the attention that had been on him over the international break. Is it legitimate to think that he will re-find confidence levels if you just leave him in the side?
Oh yeah, he will come back. And as I say, yeah, you're right, Trent did not have a great game on Saturday, but you just can't point the finger to him, because if it was a simple case of Trent's not playing well, take him out, give him a rest, stick Gomez or, you know, in at right back or whatever, and hey, presto, everything's fixed, that would be Liverpool's problems. But it's more than that. And
do you do that for one game, though?
Well, look, Steve, the way that we're going, I think people will have to be rotated now, because we're in this mad period between now and the World Cup where it's a game for Liverpool every, what, 3 or 4 days, and you just can't play the same 11. He's going to have to make changes. He's got these Rangers games, Arsenal, City. He will make changes, so I think you will see personnel rotated, really. But I just don't think Trent's, you know, taking Trent out solves the problem. It's like a collective thing. I think what I find really worrying too is that, you know, at the sort of start of the season, there were sort of injuries, and, you know, they picked a lot up in pre-season. A lot of it was, oh, well, you know, get Jota back. You know, oh, look, Thiago's been injured against Fulham. That's really awful. That takes away the midfield creativity. Get him back, it'll be okay. And you sort of look at that team, you think, well, they're all back now. And
yeah,
it's worse than ever, you know, and that means it's a collective malaise. It's a confidence thing. And it's very interesting when you look at the press. They don't press like they used to, and it's almost a confidence thing where if you lack the confidence to be aggressive, to press up the field like you should do, then you sort of sit back because you're sort of, we'll play conservatively, we'll just sort of like, we'll pick them off at our own half type thing. But of course, because they don't press, they give Brighton and the opposition the confidence to sort of play through them, and they're not even picking up the track. So it's almost like Liverpool have got the worst of every world at the minute, really. They're not pressing, which was sort of a very key part of their attacking game and also defensive game. So they're giving teams opportunity to come at them, and then they're not defending well either when they are attacked. So teams are finding it very easy to score against them. So it's just, I don't know. I can see Jurgen's frustration, because you're right. He's saying the exact same things we're saying. It's all blatantly obvious. You know what I mean? A blind man could see it, really. You know, it's you know, what are you doing? That's what, all the great things you used to do, you're not doing them anymore. What is it? Why is it there? And it sort of comes from this confidence thing. And it's like, you know, you just, such a fragile thing. And it's interesting because there are such super athletes, but I think what Roberto Martinez always used to talk about with footballers, you have the athlete, and then you've got the human being, and the human being have got the sort of same frailties as any of us. And sometimes if your confidence isn't there, and if you're having that confidence within you to go out and do what you used to find instinctively, then you play within yourself, you be conservative, you don't want to take the risk, you play the square ball, you quickly move possession along, you don't want to sort of go forward. And it just seems to be that, really. That, and you'll probably say, well, how can a team that good lack confidence? But well, they clearly do, because of all these setbacks, as Andy says, it's just one thing after another, then feeds into the other, and you just go down, down, down.
A great example of that is maybe a small thing, but I think it's been really obvious to me when I've been watching Liverpool. Where are Virgil's 40-yard diagonal balls, Andy? He doesn't do it anymore. It was almost a trademark of Liverpool at its best.
Yeah, and I think you could arguably say the same about Trent's diagonals. I think he hit one in like the 88th minute maybe against Brighton or something like that, but it was the first one he tried. And okay, I know Robertson's not there, but you know, I don't think Tsimikas's positioning is wildly different from Robertson's, or at that point it was sort of Milner on the pitch. But as you say, those trademarks are even missing, sort of. So it's Liverpool aren't even doing the things that we know they've been really good at and been really successful at. And you know, whether they've decided to tweak the game to, you know, play a different way and move away from that, or try and move away to try to get lessen the predictability of what they're going to do. But equally, what they're doing at the moment isn't working. And those types of things, like the Van Dijk you know, the crossfield balls and stuff like that were really important in helping change momentum of the game, switch the game and change the point of attack. So yeah, it, as you say, even the simple things are sort of, you are sort of wondering where they've gone. And that might just be a case of they're almost so in their own heads at this point, because whatever they're doing is not going right.
So it's confidence, isn't it? And yeah. Again, in your piece on the tactical element, as you quite rightly say, this is Liverpool's strongest midfield. I mean, last season, you know, when we had some injuries, we were saying can't wait for Henderson, Thiago and Fabinho to be back there because they're as good as anything in the world. But actually, Brighton just saw through those three.
Yeah, and that was the most concerning thing, because a lot of it this season has been, oh, well, the midfield's not, you know, the structure's not been right, so that's why teams have been able to get at Liverpool's defence so easily. But now you've got everyone back, and they still did it. They sort of, Trossard and Pascal Gross basically stood either side of Fabinho, behind Thiago and Henderson, and because Brighton had two wing-backs, they basically occupied Liverpool's full-backs, so it left so much space for Gross and Trossard to play, and the amount of times, you know, McAllister or would pick up the ball, for example, and be able to just play beyond Liverpool's midfield was even in those first 20 minutes, because Liverpool eventually sort of figured it out and stopped Brighton doing it. The amount of times he did that was... And I think Klopp, after the game, when it went 3-2, so this was sort of a different phase of the game, but he sort of referenced that Liverpool, in trying to defend the lead, didn't go and sit deep, but they didn't high press either. They were sort of in this no man's land of the middle of the pitch, and I think that explained it perfectly, and it sort of explains Liverpool generally pretty perfectly, in that they haven't quite, as David said, they're not pressing as well as they have in the past, and I did think that was partially down to the midfield and not having the strongest midfield there. But then you watch the strongest midfield play and they still weren't getting the press quite right, but equally they're not the type of side who are going to go and sit deep. They're going to want to be on the front foot, going to want to try and counter, but then when you're in that no man's land, you're sort of not helping anyone. You know, Brighton's goal comes from Mo Salah putting in a really sort of pointless press, which Adam Webster just nicely steps around really easily, and it opens the whole game up. But it was a point where you didn't need to go and press, because Liverpool weren't in a pressing situation. They were sort of, they were sat in, and the shape was pretty good. But then Mo stepped out, Webster stepped round him, and then the game opened up and all the spaces then became available. So it's just that type of thing. It's just that clarity of thought, and it goes back to that confidence. There's just this hesitation of players unsure what to do, whereas Liverpool at the best, everyone knew the role, everyone was certain in everything they were going to do, and that's why it always worked, because, you know, everyone was first to anticipate and everything, whereas now Liverpool look like they're reacting to what opposition are doing, and that's never a good thing, because that will always put you on the back foot.
Right, we've go through many of the negatives. You mentioned a couple of positives, so let's maybe extol them. Where would Liverpool be without Alisson at the moment, David? I mean, again, it's a 3-3. He's conceded three, and yet he was arguably Liverpool's best player in that game.
Yeah, I'd agree with you, Steve. You're right. In that first 20-minute period or so, where Brighton were absolutely rampant, you're right. You know, when they could have easily been 4-5-0 up, you're right. He was just making some absolute world-class saves. So I suppose that is one crumb to seize upon, the fact that your keeper's still switched on, he's still focused, he's doing all that. There were questions asked about the second one. Could he give his hand to it? I don't know. I think that he took it quite early. And then even, you know, he made a save from Welbeck, I think a 3-2 before they got the equaliser. So he was still focused, he was still switched on. I think that's one good thing to take, that your keeper is still there, he's still the world-class Brazilian that you hope you do. And I chuck Firmino in there as well, so, you know, when you're talking about people who did well, because you can talk about Nunez hasn't done it. You can talk about Mo Salah's having a disappointing campaign so far. Jota's been injured. He's come back. He's still sort of finding his feet. But, you know, Firmino's quietly got on with the business of scoring goals for Liverpool. And, you know, he could easily have had a hat-trick too. He had that header at the back post, you know, which he, with a better, you know, more clinically could have put away. It would have been a hat-trick for him. So there are some crumbs of comfort, but certainly not enough to feed you with any sort of confidence.
No. But Bobby, 5 goals though this season. Liverpool's top scorer, new contract maybe on the cards from Andy at some point, or is that still in the balance?
I mean, he's certainly going about it the right way from a personal point of view for himself. I know there was sort of criticism a little bit at the start of the season about some of his performances, I think away at Fulham, for example, and Manchester United again was another one where he sort of struggled or he impacted the games in the way in areas where he didn't need them to impact the game. But he's Liverpool's most informed attacker, I'd say, alongside Diaz. At least he is producing the goods, at least he is scoring goals, and you know he is part of, if Liverpool hang on to that, you know, a 3-2 win on Saturday, he's the man who's played a huge part in the comeback. And yeah, I think it's certainly something to consider. He's certainly got plenty to offer Liverpool, and he's that different option to the other players that they've got in those attacking areas. You know, I don't think you're going to find another Bobby Firmino. That's the type of thing. That's the thing. So, you know, it's probably worth keeping hold of him because he is unpredictable. Okay, his goal scoring is not always up to scratch at times compared to where you would want it to be in terms of the amount of production he has. But he started the season scoring goals, and if they didn't have his goals, you know, especially on Saturday, you sort of wonder what scoreline that could have ended up, I guess. But yeah, so I think there's definitely a thought in renewing his contract and whether those discussions are taking place, you know, or how far along they are, I'm not quite sure. But I'm sure, I mean, Klopp always talks about him so highly, doesn't he, and how he's sort of changed the game in terms of the number nine role and all that type of stuff. So it seems like something that, you know, you would expect Liverpool to at least explore the possibility of keeping them around, because he is different and he can have those games where he's just, you know, unplayable and is scoring goals. So yeah, he complements the other four as well. Or you would hope he, with Nunes, for example, who's still fitting in, you know, he's going to complement those types of players.
He's about as different as Nunes as you could properly get, isn't he? Liverpool invested so heavily in Darwin Nunes, and I understand that argument saying it's a gradual acclimatisation. I get that, but then you just look down the M62 and look at what Erling Haaland's doing, and you think you need a player for here and now. And if you're spending that sort of money, I think there's a lot of fans thinking, how's this guy on the bench until 80 odd minutes, David? Well, you know what? Where's the thought process here?
Yeah, I know this sounds counterintuitive, but you have to just forget about Haaland, because I know Haaland's even younger, bizarre, but Haaland's been banging the goals in for Molde before he even went to Salzburg, and then obviously on to Dortmund. So he's been doing that at a higher level for longer. As if you look at Darwin Nunez, it was really that he did very, very, very well for Benfica, but he hasn't been doing like Haaland. He hasn't been banging the goals in sort of 3-4 seasons in a row now. So I think in his development, he's behind Haaland. Now, there's questions about step up from Portuguese football to Premier League, and listen, it can't take time. You know, Bernardo Silva took time to, just when he stepped up from, you know, to when he went to Manchester City. And like, the guy is only 23, so I think you just have to look. There is no other option but to be patient. You know, you can't suddenly turn around and say, all right, get rid of Nunez, you know, because you'd have to try. What are you going to get for him now? You'd be able to sell him to the summer. You'd have to take a massive hit, so you have to stick with him. And have faith in Klopp and the coaches that they can, you know, sort of mould off the rough edges, get them up to speed in the Premier League, just instill into them what you want to do. And again, you feel a bit sorry for the fella, because you're trying to integrate him into a Liverpool team, which we've just been discussing, which is almost like suffering a collective nervous breakdown again, where they've just lost all confidence in themselves and they've stopped playing the way that they play. And you're almost saying, off you go, son, go and score a goal a day and rescue the situation, or get us two or three here. And so he's finding it quite difficult. And then he started okay, of course, you know, the goal, you know, the charity shield, goal and assist against Fulham. Of course, it was that, you go back to that red card against, you know, Palace, which is such a stupid thing, really. But yeah, I suppose he's naive, he's learning the ways of the Premier League. And, you know, that three-match ban really, really set back his development so much. And then when he comes back, you know, Liverpool are in a bit of a state, and, you know, they're struggling for confidence, and you're sort of looking at him, can you go and do it? And now Klopp's sort of thinking, do you stick or twist with him? Do you just start him in games and just try and play him through this? Or do you try and ease him on from the bench and give him cameo roles and sort of gradually build up his confidence and match fitness? And it's really, really difficult. But I say all anyone can do is just stick with it and be patient. As I say, we've got all these games now between now and the break for the World Cup, so you'd like to think there'd be enough opportunities for him to show what he can do. And I say, the lad is only 23, so, you know, stick it with him for the long term. I don't think anyone needs to start talking about always another Andy Carroll or something like that. Just, you know, let's just, you know, forget when Bobby first came in, you know, when he was signed in 2015, there was that, well, what is he? You know, because we know at the time Rodgers wasn't fussed, the owners were. they knew what they could do with him, but he didn't seem to know what to do with him. And again, there's a little bit, you know, he took time to settle. It was only when Jurgen came in then later on that season and it sort of all clicked and, you know, off he went. So I think just patience, it's all we can do. Be patient with the fella.
Right, obviously, a point against Brighton probably not good enough. The next couple of games, considering Liverpool aren't keeping clean sheets, become a little bit concerning, league-wise, that is. We'll talk Rangers in just a moment. But Arsenal and Man City coming up, Andy. I suppose, in a way, a good performance against Rangers might just tune them up a little bit more.
Yeah. I mean, they've got that sort of, dress rehearsal in a way to sort of try and put some of the problems right, sort of right some of the wrongs that, but yeah, it's not the ideal two fixes that you want, considering you look you're lacking in so much confidence, and then you watch Manchester City and what they did to Manchester United yesterday. I don't know, the scoreline sort of then it sort of flatters United in the end, but the way Manchester City went about it and the quality they've got, and Liverpool are giving up chances at the moment, and I mean, Danny Welbeck had a couple of really good opportunities in and around 6-yard box and didn't score. If that's Erling Haaland, he's scoring. So, there are concerning aspects to it. I mean, Arsenal are flying at the moment. I know, you know, they had the setback against Manchester United. But in a way, you're just sort of trying to escape some positive. These games might benefit Liverpool in the sense that it's an opportunity to go toe-to-toe with a team. You know, a lot of them this season, while teams have come on to Liverpool and been a bit more expansive and a bit more, you know, open about, you know, about the way they've gone about it and attacked them, equally Liverpool are still the ones dominating the ball and teams are looking to counter-attack and that type of thing. Whereas, you know, these type of games, you know, they're a little bit different in terms of Liverpool generally have been very good against Arsenal, and the Man City game has, you know, always produced classics basically, or generally has anyway, especially at Anfield. So you sort of, in a positive spin, you can sort of look at it that way. But equally, when you just think about the 20 minutes against Brighton in the first half, and you think, well, if Brighton can do that, what about when Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva are occupying those half spaces that Pascal Gross and Leandro Trossard did? And then suddenly you're sort of fearing the worst. So yeah, they're coming at a really bad time. Liverpool could do with another Bournemouth game, basically. But you're not going to get any of them, really, for the rest of the season. But it's a challenge, and it's one that they need to embrace, and they need to just sort of, okay, this is our situation, this is our reality. Whether that means they try and change shape, try and do something a bit different, try and surprise the opposition instead of being surprised themselves, and hope for the best. But yeah, as you say, Rangers gives them an opportunity to try and sort of set out a plan which they can take forward into those two games, because there's a world where Liverpool are still sitting on 10 points in two more games' time, and suddenly it's like the gap to the top four teams is suddenly, I mean, it's getting big at the moment to some of them. I mean, Tottenham have sort of sneaked up to 17 points without playing well, and you know, if they start playing well, you know, they're only going to build that advantage. Chelsea are sort of grinding out the results. United, I know they, you know, there was a setback for them, but you know, they look like Ten Hag looks like he's found a way of sort of getting them results as well. And you know, if you're not taking points out of the next two games in the league, then suddenly that you've got a lot of catching up to do. And you know, if you do lose these two, confidence is going to be, you know, if it's on the floor now, it's going to be in the basement. So yeah, it's two massive games, and they need to use the Rangers, and they need the Rangers game, and it needs to be a positive performance to just give them something to build on, a little bit like the Ajax game, but they'll actually be able to play again and hopefully take some momentum into it.
I'm not writing off the season, but I've almost gone back to 2005 in my head, David. I'm thinking, all right, if we finish fourth or fifth, let's hope we end the season in Istanbul.
Okay, Steve.
Come on.
If you want to cling to that, that's fine. But you know,
you must be looking forward to Rangers. Come on. I'm still looking forward to that as an occasion.
Yeah, you're right. Let's be a bit more positive. But you know, like Rangers, it's going to be a wonderful spectacle on Tuesday night. You know, when Rangers come, you know, down for the first ever competitive meet between the sides, and it's hard to think, bearing in mind the sort of the players that we've shared with each other and the common experience, really. But it should be a good game. Like it's weird, but I was just looking at Rangers there, and like, you know, I know Colak's got like 11 14s but banging the goals in. But really, what are they? Would they be a championship side? You know, would they be a mid-table championship side, something like that? There, maybe top of the championship. You know, if they were playing in England, really, because you look through the team, got people like Ryan Kent, and like, you know, he didn't make it Liverpool. John Lundstrom, you know, from Sheffield. You know, they're not. Tom Lawrence used to be at Derby and stuff. You know, even Colak, like, he's 29. He's been around everywhere. You know, and he's found his niche at sort of Scotland. So really, Liverpool should do okay in this. But of course, we all know the pitfalls. It'll be like an English Cup tie. They'll come down here. They'll be absolutely pumped up. It'll be Bannockburn, Braveheart, Stirling Bridge, you name it, all that there. And if Liverpool aren't up for the fight and the challenge, it could be a really awkward night, because we know what they'll want to do. They'll want to make it a battle. They'll want to bring Liverpool down to their level. They'll make it this real scrap. So Liverpool are first going to win that fight, going to win that battle, and then hopefully, their superior football will tell out, and then they should win. But they're going to have to earn it.
Guys, you've been fabulous as always. Thank you very much. Check out Andy's piece on The Athletic right now. Thank you to David Anderson from The Mirror as well. Thank you to you for listening to The Red Agenda. And fingers crossed, we'll have a bit more positivity after the Rangers game. We'll see you then.